This is the Taylor Report. Honest. And I'm Phil Taylor, and with me is Phil Conlon. He is with Classical Underground Wednesday, 6 to 8 p.m., and also appears as a frequent participant of Critic Circle Saturdays at 9 a.m.
Yes, good evening, and we're here.
Good. Did you say good evening?
Yes. I said good evening, yes. And we actually
the sun
have
is going. The sun is setting.
The sun is setting.
It's not a sign. All right.
We have mics that are working.
Yeah, we are.
Which it took us a few minutes, but it's all
people,
good.
Yeah, I'm a resident historian. I actually have arrived at the studio, and there was no headset, or there was a piece of one, which we shared. And you say, would you like to hear from this person? And then try to guess what is being talked about. We're going to be having a pretty special guest coming up in about 20 minutes, I would say. That's Zafar Bengash. Now, we had him on previous. Zafar is an authority on matters in some people call the Middle East, some people call it West Asia, and also the region where he is from, Pakistan, the state. And there, Pakistan, Phil, if you don't know, is in real turmoil. They have an election coming in about 3 days, and the last prime minister of the country, who was the victim of, I would guess, you would call it a political coup, pretty much with the army involved. Anyway, removed from office. And he's, I think everyone agrees, the most popular political figure in modern Pakistani history. Former cricket player who was world-renowned and therefore was, as happened in many places in the world, with either an actor or an athlete rises because people say, well, we know him. And he proved to be quite a gifted politician, as well as not just a cricket player, but really a good and accomplished political figure. Had quite a run as prime minister, probably would have been due to be reelected, but now there's a crisis and he's being inundated with charges. And we shouldn't be feel superior, as the media here tends to say, oh, well, Pakistan, or as they'll say, India. Well, you know, look, we have Donald Trump in the United States with very strange things happen, you know, where he isn't allowed, was not allowed. I don't know if he is. You could tell me. Is he allowed to use Twitter now? But when he left office, they took, he's a former president of the United States. He received 74 million votes. He wasn't allowed to be on Twitter. And I don't think I have to say I'm not a supporter of Donald Trump. But it's a curious political system where outlandish things are done to prevent somebody from having their name on the ballot, which if the name is on the ballot, that means the electorate is going to decide, at least nominally. And so when they people say point at something going on in Pakistan, which seems pretty ugly, the latest charge is that he didn't get a proper divorce. So they sentence his wife to 7 years in prison. This is just really in the past few days this has happened. And I would say to the Americans, who are the world's biggest whatever it is, you do that. I mean, you actually do the same stuff. And Phil, you actually just now told me an odd story apropos of this, that this guy Tucker Carlson.
Yes, well, Tucker Carlson, who's a strange dude, and is a form of a journalist, is in Moscow. And He's presently there. And he is supposedly has an interview coming up with the president of the Russian Federation, President Putin. And there has been this meltdown among Democrats. And I'm seeing this on Twitter, people saying, well, he must be charged with treason. Or somebody even said, this was a congressman who said that, we should bar the border to him when he comes back, not let him in the country. Okay. All right.
Well, that would be medieval. That we could go there. Yes. Did somebody mention the Logan Act? Because that's a favorite reference.
Well, no, they didn't reference the Logan Act, although I think it's just because they're usually too illiterate to know anything about American history, these characters. But they could reference it. But, of course, it doesn't apply because he's a journalist.
Well, it does apply in the sense that it never made any sense.
Oh, okay.
Was originally a vindictive idea, and it lives on because from the founding of the Great Republic to the South, they decided that anybody who was going abroad and talking to foreign leaders might be charged under the Logan Act. Logan was an individual who really didn't like to see the deterioration of relations between America's sponsor, France, who paid for the American Revolution, paid for it, provided officers, and at the great victory at Yorktown, you remember Yorktown.
Of course. I was there.
At the great victory of Yorktown, the majority of officers sitting on the horses telling them what to shoot at were French. And when the British decided they had to surrender, which was the biggest surrender in their history at that time, they came out of the fort and marched over to the commanders, and General Washington was there. And he walked right past Washington and went directly to the French and said, okay, I give up. And they said, no, you don't surrender to us. We're here, but the guy over there is the one you surrender to. And he looked at Washington, and there was an officer near Washington. So he went to the officer near Washington and said, okay, we're prepared to surrender. And he said, you can't surrender to me. You have to surrender to Washington. And that, by the way, that isn't a small deal. If you remember the Vietnam War, so if you're going to go and, you know, into the meeting, who's going to be there? And the loser very often tries to dictate who he'll talk to. I don't want to talk, because after all, it's been a war. And anyway, I'm way off from the point, which is that France carried the Americans. And Americans signed a declaration of eternal love and friendship, never to be broken. And it only took them about 6 months to change their mind. And so leaders such as Hamilton began to flirt again with England and to wish for a common cause with England. And Mr. Logan was against that. And Logan was a liberal type of guy and anti-British in colonialism, etc. So he said, well, the leaders, the Federalists, you remember them too, Adams and all those guys. Anyway, they said, we tried to talk to this new revolutionary government in France, but they're irrational, these revolutionaries in France. So Logan said, I don't believe that. I'm going to go and ask them. And he did. He sailed across the Atlantic. He had a meeting with various individuals. And he came back as an American citizen. And he said, it's not true what Hamilton and the other guys are saying. That, in fact, the French are willing to talk, and we could, because they had a little problem with the security of their commercial shipping. It sounds like I've been reading a lot about this, doesn't it? So, at any rate, he said, I want the American people to know that our good friends, the French, have not turned on us, and that we could have peace with France. We don't have to go to war with France. And so they said, okay, we're going to charge you, Logan. You were representing the Americans, and that's illegal. You can't do it. You can't, as a private individual, involve yourself. And the answer was, when they went to court, is that he didn't say he was the American government. He said he was, what's the guy's name? Tucker.
Tucker.
He's not. Yeah, yeah. He Tucker said, Carlson. "I'm Tucker Carlson."
He's not an ambassador.
I am. They didn't think I didn't say I'm representing the American Mr. Adams and Mr. Hamilton and anybody in the government. By the way, Hamilton was not in the government. Hamilton was always in the behind the scenes with his little bloody dagger.
Can we say that Hamilton was the first deep state guy?
He was. Oh yeah, he was. He was a blankety blankety blank. Anyway, a friend of Canada, by the way. I mean, in the sense that he helped. He was pro-British. But really, to come back to the point. Okay, so Tucker Carlson's in Moscow. All he's doing is, as you say, maybe some people don't like it. It's called journalism. It is journalism of a type. I don't see any clean journalism in the United States at all. And so he is speaking. He's getting an interview with the president of the country. That's pretty significant. And the American Congress can jump up and down, but they tell them to pass a law. Are you going to say people can't visit other countries? Ask Paul Robeson.
Don't answer that question. Yes, they are going to say that.
The answer is yes. Yeah. I was reading about an American woman who was on the blacklist, and she had a passport, and she was in Europe when they decided that America had a periodic paroxysm of hysteria and pointing at each other. And so she, as I said, she had a passport. When she returned, they took it away from her. So she comes back. Where had she been? France, Britain. And she hadn't been to Moscow. She'd been living in, she was a screenwriter. She'd been living in France and England, writing movies and et cetera. I guess the big crime was that she attended Picasso's birthday party, and sitting next to her was the leader of the French Communist Party. So when she returned to the greatest, freest country in democracy on earth, they took her passport away from her. This is all by way of saying, America is a very dangerous country. It's a danger to itself because it's delusional. It suffers from tremendous delusions. But we're the deputy delusional government. Canada has deputized itself to be as crazy. If you sing crazy, I'm not going to say you're wrong. I'm going to do crazy with you.
Yeah. Now, I don't know, Phil, if you saw the scene the other day where the American senator who was concerned about TikTok was interviewing the CEO of TikTok, who was a gentleman from Singapore.
Oh, yes.
Right. And he's trying to explain to the senator that he's not a Chinese person. He's a person from Singapore. And, of course, I think the senator knows that. He went to Harvard after all.
Well, no, wait. Please.
Well, maybe he doesn't. Sorry. Yeah, you're right. You're right.
Yeah. Okay.
He doesn't know the difference. The senator doesn't know the difference between.
The gentleman looked Chinese, did he not?
You rest your case. Is that it?
He's a senator, and they can tell him.
Yeah.
And so. Yes. Go ahead. You were going to tell the story.
Well, no. He just kept saying that. Are you a member of the Chinese Communist Party? And he keeps saying, Senator, I'm Singaporean. And he goes, of what country are you a citizen? Senator, I'm Singaporean.
Yeah.
Do you have a Singaporean passport? Yes, Senator.
Do you have any other passports? I watched that.
Right.
Do you have some other passport? Yes. You know, when you say he's from Harvard, that's such a funny...
Yeah.
You know, at this point in history,
right.
Harvard is now, they just got rid of the black president of Harvard because she had given an academic, uncolorful, peculiar response to whether she was beating up students for supporting Palestine. And she said, I'm not beating up students for supporting Palestine. And they said, well, you shouldn't be president of Harvard. That was kind of the logic.
That's what happened.
So on the matter of delusional and Canada's support for it and enthusiasm, today's Toronto Star has a perfect headline. U.S. delivers warning to Iran-backed groups over future attacks. And just warning. They dropped bombs on several locations in Syria and several locations in Iraq. And they call this communication. I think the Globe word for it was a message. Well, here's the Globe headline. U.S. vows further retaliation, get a load of the word retaliation, against Iran-backed groups after striking dozens of sites in Iraq, Syria. We have to explain that Biden is now in election mode, is part of this. And the question is, if you want to be elected again, you have to behave, they call it presidential. You have to do something presidential. And Americans are stumped as to what that would be other than bombing somebody. How do I know he's presidential? He bombed. Clinton came in and bombed the hell out of Iraq. People have forgotten. He bombed Iraq for a long time before there was any direct conflict because they reserved the right to fly over Iraqi airspace. There's a term they use. What is that?
They had a no-fly zone.
A no-fly zone. Yeah. So they wanted to see to it that there were no flies in Iraq. And it was their job, and they gave it to themselves. And so we have this stupid language called retaliation. And you have to really talk slowly and say, how could retaliation? The United States is illegally occupying one third of Syria. It is sitting on their oil fields. It is also in an area where there is grain, wheat. And they give themselves the right to assault anyone they wish along there. And, you know, by the way, while I'm talking about speaking slowly, something that is not often mentioned or mentioned enough. That is also the Iraqi border. And the United States is determined that there be no easy communications or trade and business done between Iraq and Syria. So having a occupied that area, they can control all movement in the region. So they are effectively like a superpower sitting at a strategic place between Iraq and Syria. Both Iraq and Syria, of course, have told them, in the case of Syria, they won the battle in the sense that they have defeated the main armed groups that the United States threw at them. But then now the U.S. has complicated it by putting themselves there. But in the case of Iraq, the Americans have promised to go home, but they have not gone home.